A Wednesday Lenten Sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan on April 1, 1998, in the series Songs in the Night, entitled When Forsakenness Overwhelms. The texts for the sermon are Psalm 22 and Mark 15. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
A song in the night, when forsakenness overwhelms us. Psalm 22 is certainly one of the most eloquent and poignant expressions of forsakenness and a sense of abandonment that has ever been written. It is a moving piece of poetic passion, and it has become indelibly set in our minds as the expression of Jesus since the fourth word from the cross, my God, why hast thou forsaken me, has caused this psalm to be identified with the crucifixion at its nadir. And we hardly think of Psalm 22 as being the originating expression. We Christians tend rather to read Psalm 22 from Jesus' cry rather than to understand Jesus' cry from Psalm 22. Do you see the difference? It is part of the arrogance of the Christian church. We appropriate, of course, the Jewish scriptures, the scriptures of Israel. And then we read Jesus back in to those expressions, which is really backwards. We ought rather to understand Jesus' experience as Jesus no doubt understood his own experiences. And as the gospel writers portrayed those experiences on the basis out of the context of a Psalm 22. The passion story of Jesus in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John is not so much history remembered as it is prophecy historicized. By that I mean the accounts that we have are not the accounts that were the result of somebody with a stenographer's pad taking notes, or to put it in our own context, not the consequence of someone there with a camcorder. Rather, in the anguish of that experience of crucifixion, those very early followers of Jesus trying to make sense of it, trying to understand it, went back to their scriptures. And in their scriptures, they found a way of interpreting what had happened. In the Passion stories, there are 13, or some would say 17, depending on whether certain allusions are granted place, 13 or 17 references to the Hebrew scripture in the telling of the story of the cross. And 8 of the 13 or 17 are from the Psalms. And 5 of those eight from the Psalms are from Psalm 22. Psalm 22 was a place that those immediate followers of Jesus went in order to understand what in the world had happened. And so Psalm 22 became the interpretive instrument by which the gospel writers brought to expression that experience of Jesus. It is a very moving piece of writing, and it expresses in the depth of the anguish that comes to expression the experience of Jesus, probably the way Jesus went through it. Just as last week we said, for him to breathe his last and say, Father, into thy hand I commend my spirit, was simply for him to reach back to his own childhood prayer. Into thy hand I commit my spirit was the way a Hebrew child ended every day. And it was his, now I lay me down to sleep. So here, I think there's little doubt that Jesus, going through the darkness and the forsakenness and the abandonment as he did, would have had in mind this expression of the psalmist. We do need a song, don't we? We do need something by which to bring to expression that which we are experiencing in our depths. And Psalm 22 would have been an obvious song in Jesus' night by which he could cry to God. In the most tragic sense of abandonment, yet clinging on desperately because he was praying after all, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Psalm 22, however, as its use by the gospel writers is interpreted, can be read two ways. Mark, who we think was the original gospel, has the fourth word from the cross, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And Jesus breathes his last, and that's it. That's a pretty stark way to end the gospel, isn't it? It's a pretty stark way to tell the story of Jesus. In Mark's gospel, if you just take what's there, you have Jesus dying in a sense of abandonment. Matthew follows him in that. Luke softens it. Luke doesn't even use Psalm 22. Luke has the word of forgiveness, the word of paradise tomorrow, and then, into thy hands I commend my spirit. Different feel, isn't it? Somebody is graciously sending me notes from a relatively near pulpit every week. I don't know why he does that. He goes to two or three services and then he sends me notes and he takes on it. And there was one in a neighboring village that talked about the forsakenness and then rushed immediately to John's gospel where John says, Jesus says, it is finished. Luke softens. Luke doesn't talk about forsakenness. Luke has Jesus dying in trust and commitment of his soul to Jesus, to God. John's gospel, Jesus is in charge, isn't he? It is finished. I've done the work. That's true of John's gospel throughout. No one takes my life from me, I lay it down. Jesus is always in charge, in control. But in Mark, it's abandonment, it's darkness. But there are those who say, well, it was the custom, if you cite the opening statement of a psalm, what was intended was that the whole psalm should be taken into consideration. And what was really going on is that Jesus was reciting the psalm, which may well be true. Still today, an observant Jew will go through the Psalter regularly, reciting from memory, in most cases, segments of the Psalter every day, waking up in the morning, reciting the Psalter. So it's not at all difficult to imagine that in Jesus' darkness, he may well have been going through the whole psalm. Maybe that's what Mark was signaling, that Jesus was going through that psalm. And of course, if Jesus was going through that whole psalm, then where does he end? Not, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? But, O Lord, yours is the dominion. You rule over the nations. It ends in a strong song of praise to the God who all the ends of the earth are called to praise this God, and the one who was afflicted and who suffers experiences deliverance and comes into the congregation and sings his praise. So one could argue that what Mark was signaling was that Jesus found in Psalm 22 an expression of his sense of abandonment, but in the recitation of that whole psalm was moving from abandonment to a sense of deliverance. Well, which is it? Which would you think? I don't know whether we can be certain. I have to admit that for me, I think that Mark pictures for us Jesus dying alone in the darkness. He doesn't give us any hint that there was any breakthrough. And I think the very fact that Luke softens that and John doesn't use it either, but gets Jesus back in control is an expression of the uneasiness that is felt having Jesus being crucified, dying with a sense of abandonment. Why do I think that's what Mark was really saying to us? Well, I suppose because I think that's the way life is. I recognize that Psalm 22 is the experience of poignant suffering and abandonment which issues in eventual deliverance and praise. But the problem with importing that into the darkness of crucifixion is that Jesus died in the darkness. It was over. Jesus experienced no vindication. Jesus got no angel visitant. I was noticing that in last Sunday's scripture lesson when I was reading Luke's account of the garden scene. Luke has angels ministering to Jesus. I don't think Luke feels comfortable with Jesus on the edge. Just like my preacher friend wanted to assure his people quickly that Jesus was really in control. We don't like Jesus out of control. We don't like Jesus in abandonment and darkness. We don't like God not moving in, do we? But isn't that the way it is all too often? Is it not the real test of faith to be able to cry out in anguish, "My God," when there is no answer? What about 6 million Jews in the Holocaust? Where was their vindication? Where was their indication that God rules? I think that in the church we've tried to convince people that God will make it all right, and then when it doesn't happen, people drop off, so the world is full of people who have been hurt by the church's message that God will make it all right, when in their lives it simply wasn't made all right. It seems to me that the cross of Jesus Christ is indication that God is not a fix-it God, and that it's not always going to turn out well. Sometimes it's just darkness. John Dominic Crossan is known for his fine turn of a phrase, and when some of us were at Duke recently, he contrasted an episodic God with an epiphanic God. And the God of conventional Christianity, and frankly, the God of Psalm 22, ending in praise, is an episodic God. The God who is beyond us, out of here, the supreme being, the ruler of all, who dips in occasionally, an episode here, and an episode there, and an episode there. And you're lucky if you go through the valley and the light breaks through. Thank God. But it doesn't always. And it didn't at Calvary. Crossan says, rather than an episodic God who is out of here, dipping in on occasion, fixing things, rather than the episodic God, he suggested we think of an epiphanic God. We talk a lot around here in the season after Christmas, the season of epiphany, having epiphany eyes. Epiphany eyes see. And they see in a moment something that's always true, but not always seen. The God who is always there, but whom we do not always see and of whom we are not always aware. The epiphanic God, the God who discloses God's self in some moments Not because suddenly God is there, but the God who is always there becomes the presence to us in that epiphany moment. The epiphanic God would be the God who wasn't out of here, needing to come in and fix Calvary, but the God who was being crucified in the anguish of Jesus. The God who was a part of the Jewish people who were put into gas ovens. And the God who is present with you in your darkness, in the anguish, absorbing the pain and the darkness. But because God leaves us free, and waits for us to learn to love, God doesn't come crashing in for good or ill. So we have in Psalm 22 an instrument, a liturgical piece, by which to give expression to some of the darkness that sometimes some of us go through. We have a sense in our sense of abandonment that there has been someone there before. The one who was there before with us. Not to fix it, but to be present in it, so that we have a fellow sufferer who walks with us. I suppose the praise section of Psalm 22 was the expression of Israel that ultimately God is God, and God's sway will finally prevail. Maybe for Israel, that praise section at the end was comparable to what Easter is for us. But remember Easter for Jesus was after the curtain of history fell. And so it is for us. Once again, we preachers have wanted to comfort you and assure you that finally light will break through, and I cannot do that. I cannot do that. Sometimes we die in the darkness, abandoned, with a presence in the absence of the one who is always with us. What I can say to you is that eventually I'll be able to say to you, the darkness is not the last word. But I will not say that until Easter morning. And even then, an Easter morning, I will say to you that Easter's happened to Jesus. But you and I are still under the shadow of the cross. And that's why sometimes it can be so dark and so lonely And we really ought not to try to soften that. Henry Nouwen says, we want to rush into cure, when what the sufferer needs is someone simply to be there in the darkness to care. Psalm 22 is a song in the night for one who experiences the total dissolution of his or her life. And that's the way it is sometimes. And even then, I would say, hold on and trust. For that may be the last word before her history's curtain runs down for you. But it's not the last word, if that makes any sense. What I'm really afraid of is painting a picture that can't hold up for you in the darkest night. Do you understand? No promises that paint life with a brush that's not honest, really, to the Scriptures. And certainly not honest to our human experience.